Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
All right, everyone. Well, you knew Roma after the victory over Udinese. You knew they were not going to give us much time to enjoy, or at least two in a row. That was out of the question. Very rarely do they give us two joys in a row. They draw 1-1 to Athletic Bilbao in a match that is fascinating for a number of reasons. Before we get into that, obviously, our newest patron, another person looking to be admitted to the psychiatric ward, Logan Denson. Logan, thank you for your support. And thank you to all of you crazy people who decide to subject yourselves to this and support us here. It means so much. Patreon.com/RomaPress, at IS Roma Press on social media, YouTube. Like, subscribe, please do all that stuff. We're barely pushing through this because this was, Andy, in terms of frustration, I mean, this has to be up there with the rest. I mean, this was typical Roma for a host of reasons. Obviously, the timing to concede like that in the final moments, wasteful. Did they create a whole lot? Not really. But that second half, they were very poor. Where do you want to start with this? Because for me, I'm not going to come on here tonight, pull my hair out, go mad, go crazy. Not at that point yet. It's still the early days of Ivan Juric. I mean, this is all about seeing how he adjusts and what he does.
Sure, but also this is the Europa League. I could name you like maybe 60 games just like the ones we witnessed today in this competition that we've played in the last 3 years. I can't tell. If I think about all the draws, do you even remember games that made us feel physically sick? Like last year, Slavia Praha 2-0. That was a beating. This is a cakewalk for me.
Yeah, this is nothing. I mean, we should be able to adjust to these things standing on our heads. This one is really child's play. Again, the timing is quintessential Roma to concede like that on on a set piece with, I mean, every single one of your players caught flat-footed. Cristante, I don't know what he was or wasn't doing on that set piece. But again, this is something I don't really know as far as individuals go, if you're going to gain a whole lot out of this. For me, this is still all about Ivan Juric. It's still seeing what he does, how he wants Roma to play, what of the previous teams of his we can see into this new Roma. And I am sure when he goes home tonight, when he turns on, for those of you who don't know, he is a very big heavy metal fan. Dare I say, even some death metal bands. He did some interview like 5 to 7 years ago that I came across, and he named some of the bands, and they all just sound like criminal charges, like assault or something like that. I don't know. But when he puts that on full blast, I'm sure he's going to see things that infuriate him. It's like the movie Accountant, yeah? When have you seen that one now?
Yes, with Ben Affleck, no?
Yes, when he's got some, was he autistic? I think that's what it was. But one of his coping mechanisms is that at nighttime he puts his stereo on full blast just to like get into this rhythm to be able to sleep. That's how I picture Ivan Juric, just death metal.
I will have to make a more child-friendly reference because your children are also listening in. So in Monsters University, when... You know, in Monsters University, there is a character, you know, it all takes place on a university campus. And the mom, I think of the sorority or fraternity, she drives the monsters and drops them off in her car. And she's like, I'm just going to go listen to my tunes. And then she rolls up the window and there's.
Oh, so, man, we're about to go down a cinema rabbit hole because of who that lady was. Which television show she's been on.
I'm sorry.
Obscure references, like she is in the movie. Honey, I Blew Up the Baby. Before we go into that and really get off track, this was tonight. I was eager to see what Juric did in terms of turnover, in terms of positioning, particularly Baldanzi. I was very glad to see he was inserted into the starting 11. And I didn't think he was really going to not go for it tonight. I figured, and I think everybody assumed he was going to put out a strong team. I am still trying to understand the manner in which he wants them to play in attack. Now, Ivan Juric teams are not exactly known for champagne, eye-catching, attacking football. The things that they are known for, I don't think I'm breaking news when I say Roma, maybe only a few of their players are cut out to be absolute pain in the backsides to the same level at which he was able to get out of those guys. I mean, just pure Bidoni, who had no business being in Serie A, starting for him, and he got them to be just pests to the opponent. It's going to take some time, particularly in midfield. But there was many of the same disjointed attacking actions today. As far as the midfield goes, again, I was happy to see Baldanzi, Angelino, that cross, I think it should be hung in a museum because
Angelino has an excellent touch. It's becoming more and more evident that he is probably one of the best players when it comes to, you know, when you're in ball possession. I think he had the most touches in the match against Udinese, which makes sense because with Juric, clearly he's sort of pivoting into that Kolarov role.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Remember when every single action went through Kolarov? Well, it's happening with Angelino right now.
I mean, that cross was perfect. Again, we're coming from the days. It's like how they label time BC, AD. For us, it's before Spinazzola, after Spinazzola. The guy could not cross to save his life. That cross, just replaying it in my head. I mean, it by the millimeter perfect to Dovbyk. It was sublime seeing that sort of cross. Again, given it seems like it's been over a half decade since Kolarov at his peak when he was delivering crosses like that. As far as some of the guys, I think it's becoming clear, at least to me, maybe I'm overreacting. Some guys are going to find it difficult to get into this team, given their characteristics, given the way that Juric likes to play. Obviously, going to from a four to a three-man defense, that changes things as well. Sule is the first one that comes to mind, yeah? I mean, he's the one that really jumps off the screen to me as one that this is going to be a bit awkward for him, I guess.
Well, Sule signed up for one thing, he's going to get another thing, you know? I mean, Sule signed up for what he thought Daniele De Rossi was going to give him. Now he finds himself with someone who is not Eusebio Di Francesco, because you can think all the worst things about Eusebio Di Francesco, but, I mean, he let Matias Sule just run with the ball, and Juric is not going to do that. At least for now, in the sense that if there are players on this team that will clearly have to work in order to get their shot from Juric. Right now, Sule is behind Baldanzi, is behind Dybala, Paredes also. We are talking about, you know, a guy like Kone definitely is going to be a guy who is going to be starting and sitting on the bench, starting based on what Juric sees in training. Because even today, you know, when a journalist asked him about Kone yesterday, Juric didn't want to reveal too much. And this morning, he said basically the opposite of what he had said before in the match against Udinese. In the match against Udinese, he said, yeah, he's good, but he's still not there. And today, he's like, well, in training, I saw him much better. So definitely, this is a coach who, and he said it himself during the press conference, there are players that we still need to see on the pitch. There, that's why we will do some rotation, because we still must see the likes of Baldanzi, Kone, Sule, Hummels. So Saud today, Saud make his debut, you know. So there is a lot of work in progress. But one thing, yes, is guaranteed, that no one will be guaranteed playing time under Juric based on just, you know, the transfer fee that you pay for him, or the pedigree, or if Paredes was an important piece last year, sure. But if he's in no condition, I mean, Paredes in the training photos that sometimes I have to collect for our media library on the website, Paredes right now, he looks like my zio Paolo, who's been depressed for the last 9 years. I, you know, he's got that big gut, you know, and it's yeah, not a good look. So I'm just saying, you know, Juric is definitely not the coach that you approach with an attitude. Like, if I were Sule, I get to work, I don't say anything, and I trust he will do just that, because I do think in order to do the things he did at Frosinone, you really need like a hard worker's mentality, because that's what it's going to get you to impress Juric. Juric is not going to be easily impressed. Tonight, there were definitely some choices that sent a clear message. Baldanzi starting. You know why? Because he's doing well. You know why? Because he responded well on the pitch. Kone, he's starting. You know why? Because he actually took it personally and improved in training and showed me that he cares and that he's focused.
Yeah, there were some team selections that I found interesting. Do you find that Atu Hummels still yet to?
Well, I mean, he's 34. He's 34. He hasn't played in 3 months, dude. I mean,
he's coming off a superb season, though.
He's coming off a superb season. But, dude, do you remember Belotti? Belotti was took what, like 4 or 5 months to really get going. I think he, if I remember correctly, he got injured during one of the international breaks at the very beginning. Yes. Hummels definitely is someone that we will see, who knows, maybe against Venezia. I just think there's no point in worrying about it now, because right now you're working with this three-man defense. Today you had Hermoso, and clearly if Hermoso is not there, Angelino does it. But I do think that with Hummels, you know, you have a quality player, but you also want to be sure that he's going to give you those quality minutes, because if I have to see another Vermaelen, I'm gonna lose it, you know. So remember the excitement, and remember what he gave us.
There's very few matches that live in my head. So just obscure matches, man, like so vividly in my mind. That Porto
still haunts us. Yes, for sure. No, for sure. I think in this case, it's just with Juric also right now, clearly he is someone who has to get to know this team. It's absolutely clear that he doesn't have time, in the sense that he needs to get to know them, but he's playing with a lot at stake, because this Roma team needs results. So in the Europa League right now, I mean, I'll take a 1-1. I don't give a crap. In the sense, I can live with this result. It's a shame, because it almost feels like a rehash of the match against Genoa, where, you know, you score in the first half, you are the superior team in the first half, and then you let the opponent just take hold of you, and you concede on an annoying set piece, you know. And
this team is much better, though, than Genoa, no?
For sure. I mean, have you seen Genoa, what they did against Sampdoria? Come on, please. Genoa are going through a horrible spell, so that, obviously. But I think Juric, what I mean by this is that Juric has a very hard task in figuring this team out, but also securing the results. And sometimes the two don't go together, because sometimes in order to get the results you want, you need to rely on a select batch of players and, you know, tell others, listen, I like you, I have no problem with you, but I don't think you're in shape to contribute right now, because someone like Samuel Dahl, you know, I mean, a guy who is not on Roma's UEFA list, when is he going to get a shot? If Angelino keeps performing like this, like, do you take a chance and give Dahl his debut, or do you keep Angelino on to for him to continue on this streak? Those are the questions that Juric has to answer for himself, by himself.
Well, beyond that, because I think now the concerns, whether, you know, whether you think it's more so if it was the fault of Derossi, the players, wherever you find fault in a result like tonight or Genoa's, we are at least gaining in sample size of this team. We are starting to get a very clear understanding as to what the very apparent flaws are within the team as well. And as far as that goes, any concerns you might have moving forward, I mean, I just wrote a couple of things down. Now, I don't want to be too difficult on the guy. Saúd, oof, that was not good. So if something happens to Salik, not good. I mean, you're going to have to go with El Shaarawy.
Oh, come on. Right? No, come on. Come on, John. No, you can't do that, in the sense that, you know, you can't just write off a guy after.
Hold on. I am not writing him off. I am also trying to get an understanding as we watch these matches go. It becomes clear to us. We gain a better understanding as to who this team is, what their strengths, weaknesses are. What are your concerns? Because for me, this thing with the attack is still a bit. Tactically, I don't think anybody is going to come in here and just wave a wand with, okay, we're going to play a 4-3-3, we're going to 4-3-2-1, whatever the tactical change or switches are. I think really this team, just in attack at least, I think that's one of those things where it's just going to have to fix itself, as stupid and as elementary as that may sound, or as difficult as that may be to accept. I don't know what manager comes in and tries to change something dramatically that gets Paulo Dybala, Dovbyk, Sule, Pellegrini magically meshing together cohesively like a well-oiled machine. I think it's just going to be one of those things. The more they get to play together, they will eventually figure it out. So I am not necessarily concerned about the disjointed attack, but there are some areas, you know, or roles within the pitch that I am worried about. And I see that right side, Salik and Salamakers with him injured. I mean, in my opinion, even hoping for November, I think even that is going to be a stretch to me. You don't see him until after the break. I'm worried about that flank. As far as defense, I don't know what the best three are. Is it Mancini, Indica, and Hermoso for you? Is that the best three? Probably, yeah.
I do think that that Angelino can also do his job really well there. I think against Udinese, he played with great physicality for the guy his size. He was doing a bit of everything in that match. So I do think that Angelino is still a valid solution going forward. But Hermoso definitely. Definitely the starter, and right now we don't know what Dybala is dealing with, so that will be also interesting this weekend, because Dybala today came off at halftime due to a physical issue, and you're playing against Venezia, a good chance to see either Tommaso Baldanzi take his place or Mattia Sule get his shot. So we have to, yes, it's sort of a balancing act. It's a tricky balancing act of understanding who can give you the needed response right away. You want other players to grow in confidence, especially with a new manager. So many of these signings came in with the idea of playing with Daniele De Rossi, and here they are. They find themselves with a coach who is looking for something completely different, completely foreign to most of them. So it takes time, and unfortunately, Roma don't have that time at their disposal.
No, they don't. I also have to laugh because, too, I mean, the name De Rossi, it is so household. It's a renowned, it's common. And then if you would have asked some of these players, like, tell me what you know about Ivan Juric in the summer, half of them, they look at you. The most they can tell you is that he's Eastern European, somewhere from the previous Yugoslavia is the most they can probably say to you. I think he's probably from there. But I do find it interesting. You are right in the sense of, yes, these guys signed up for one thing and they got another. The problems that we're seeing, though, at least in attack, I don't really comprehend sort of what the answer would be. Is it just going to be, again, these guys need more time? I think that's eventually how it resolves itself. But to me, I don't even view it as an issue of, because some of our patrons were saying, well, if you look at the attack, there's just something about Dybala, Dovbik, just something off, you know? They don't have the same understanding, or they don't look as comfortable next to each other as, you know, as Dybala looked next to Lukaku.
Okay. Well, you know, you need time. You need time. In the first, I mean, how many balls did Dovbik touch? No pun intended. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, John. It's late. I'm sorry. It's my brain is fried. No, but really, how many balls did Dovbik touch in those 4 match days with De Rossi? How many balls has he touched in the last 2 games? Considerably more.
Yes.
Something is starting to click. Like, something is starting to click. Obviously, there are other things that, you know, you pay for. That's why consistency is so important. No, you just hire a manager, or you do all of preseason, and you hope in continuity and consistency in decisions on and off the pitch. If you remove a manager and you put another one, that's fine. But in the sense, you're taking something, you're adding something back, but there's that push and pull effect. You will have a hard time settling in. You will still need to address things that don't work, and nothing just works like that. Remember, John, remember when everybody thought that Paulo Dybala, Nicolò Zaniolo, and Tammy Abraham were going to click like that? Remember that? Well, that didn't work. That was a disaster, but it just didn't work. It didn't click, and it was obvious. So there are things that on paper appear great. There are things that perhaps are not as obvious, but that take time. Right now, Dovbik is giving you what you need him to give you. 3 games, consecutive games where he's scoring. That's huge for a guy that you paid a lot of money for, that you were waiting and hoping for him to unlock himself. That's what he's doing right now.
I thought when you were speaking about, I thought you were going to segue into somehow the ultras and some of the things we are seeing. I have done like 2 or 3 Everton thing media appearances over the last few days. I'm so tired right now. I can't even recall what I said, but they all asked to me about, well, Everton fans are concerned about the backlash from the
supporters. We are concerned about whether the Friedkins are out of touch or something.
Out of touch. Yeah, I mean, I had to explain to them, and I wish I was able to, you know, get on the same boat as Anshirawi and sniff some things so I'd be awake right now. I wish I was that cool, but when I see things today, like some of the signs, I'm sure you saw the thing that said Yankee go home. This is a group of individuals
with an old poster of De Rossi as a player, not even De Rossi as a coach. Like, you haven't updated your poster since 2018. Like, seriously, like, those are the same posters we used to see with Pallotta.
Yeah, well,
did you run out of money?
Somebody asked to us in the group chat, and I didn't address it. They said, how come the handwriting always looks the same? Are they using a stencil? No, it's the same local people who write these things. It's the same, like somebody locally, the same person is doing those things. So that's why they have the same appearance. I have tried over these last few days because I've been in these group chats with, you know, people who I would consider the Romanisti 1.0 for some websites, the very old way of thinking. And I do my best to try and at least get a different perspective on things when I don't agree with them, to at least try to come to an understanding as to how they view things this way. Man, I can't even fake or even come up with something out of my backside to make it seem like we have some interesting dialogue here about this between you and I, to make it seem like they have a legitimate argument. I mean, these are the goalposts between their complaints are constantly shifting. First it was, well, Palota, you're never in the city. You're never here. Okay, well, here the Friedkins are here quite often. Okay, well, now we're going to shift. Now we don't like that. And by the way, we're also going to waterboard you with this stupid mention of the crest again. Now it is...
No, but the problem was Palota talks too much, and now they don't talk enough. That was the big complaint with Palota. It was always, oh, my God, like, he doesn't know what he's talking. Why is he talking? Why is he addressing us? You know, we don't want to hear from him.
It's so infuriating to me because these are the ones, and they will be the first one to tell to a player, to a manager, that they are harming Roma. They are not putting the shirt and the club above themselves. They are the first ones to tell you that. The first. They will waterboard you with that. They will waterboard you about somebody being Romano. If they are Roma supporters since birth, I mean, they will take these things. You will be taken off-site to a CIA black site, and they will put a hood over you, and they will just pour the same argument over and over and over and over and over. But when it comes to stuff like this, that is so clearly, first, not going to achieve anything. Let's just be very clear. Nothing is going to... De Rossi was sent away. Do you think now, because you are doing this protest and making these banners, do you think they're going to send away Ivan Juric and bring De Rossi back? No. Which, by the way, their statement the other Monday when they addressed, that was what, their second or third public statement since August 2020, something.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That.
I think fourth. Yeah. This is their fourth statement, like direct. Yeah.
The thing I loved was they didn't go back on it. They didn't apologize for it. And they addressed the situation head on. They didn't try and...
I mean, they said we are so... It was painful. It was a painful decision. We know that De Rossi will become a great coach. Who knows? Perhaps someday back at Rome.
They left the door. Oh, that was the thing I loved. They said, you know what?
Yes.
We split ways now, but in the future, who knows? But the fact they didn't address many of these imbeciles that... If you don't see the correlation
today they continued,
people,
you know,
and you know, you're 50, 60, early 70s year old, parents, uncle, aunt, grandmother, family, whatever, they are cut from the same cloth. Like, it's alarming to me.
To me, the thing is always about the timing of these things. You know, you can be discontent, but also just then at some point, like, put it in a drawer or like limit yourself in the sense that, you know, we get it. Everybody's unhappy. The situation is far from perfect. We don't want to be here in this situation. We were all disappointed by Roma's decision to sort of, you know, reject their own idea of having De Rossi lead the team. You know, you don't renew a guy for 3 years just to then just completely sack him out of left field. But okay, it's been made. The decision is final. Daniele De Rossi right now is in Iceland on vacation with his wife, earning 3.5 million euros a year. He's not starving in Cambodia, okay? He doesn't have Alzheimer's disease, and we're all here sitting praying for him. He's fine. He's healthy. He's perfectly fine. It was a painful decision for all of us, sure, but at some point you realize that even on, especially on a European night, like 15 minutes of silence from the curva, like what for, you know? And then
so the second match in a row, you made your point the other day against Udinese.
And then the players near the end, they go and then they chant, you know, only the shirt, only the shirt. These are the same people that then go out of the Stadio Olimpico and they wait for that team bus to leave the stadium so that they can scream, please sign my t-shirt. You know,
it's
what I mean to say is move on. At some point, move on, or at least get creative with these banners. You know, like if you're going to use the same stuff that I used to see in 2018 when De Rossi was trying to get his contract renewed and Roma were like, nah, it's not happening. And everybody was putting those posters up. At least change the poster. It's been 6 years. Move on, you know, for Christ's sake. Also, the team, it's always... Are the fans putting themselves ahead of the team? Because sometimes it really feels like that. Because when you say only the shirt, but then you're drawing so much attention to yourself. You're putting so much importance on yourself. So
and you're shitting on the new manager. Like you're making life 50,000 times harder on the guy.
For sure. For sure. Especially on a European night when there's a bigger spotlight. The opponent is coming in. Everyone is excited. And then what? And then you just sort of, it's like popping a balloon. Like what? Why?
And by the way, when you look at Roma's entire groups, what are we calling it now? Instead of the group stage, league stage, league phase, open phase, I don't know, whatever we want to call it. I mean, tonight was the second most difficult match that Roma have. They play Spurs later during the league phase. But this one tonight was, at least in this part of the competition, among your most difficult of the entire stage. So why are we going to do this? What does this achieve? I can't understand it. And again, I can't even pretend to understand, like I can see what they are trying to accomplish by doing this. To me, it's mad. It's mad. And on top of that, too, again, this is Ivan Juric. This is a guy who, you know, whatever faults you may have with the selection of Ivan Juric, the things I know I won't have to worry about are motivation. I won't have to worry about the players working hard because I won't see the pitch under Ivan Juric if they are not working hard. Fine. Why are we trying to make the environment then on a guy who had his first
job? That's what I don't get, John. Yeah, that's what I don't get.
I don't get it at all. And it is frustrating to me because, again, this is the same group. They will waterboard you with only Roma ahead of everything else, the shirt above that. And then whilst doing that, they are proactively and knowingly trying to create hostility. Listen, you made your point Sunday. Fine. Move on. You got the statement from the Friedkins. You have a new manager now. Even he has had to address this shit because you've made it all the more uncomfortable for him. Now move on. Sure. But do you think we're going to see it against Venezia too?
To me, it always, John, reminds me of that season with Spalletti, final season of Spalletti. Remember that whole tension between the curva and Pallotta and the rules, I don't know, the authority. I don't know. It always felt like it never was about the team. There was always someone's interest there first. And the team, Spalletti and the team, were really going through it. A season full of ups and downs, a talented team that was trying to achieve something in Totti's final year. And it always felt like someone was there to whip this team when it didn't need to be whipped. And I think... Yes. You can have an issue with the ownership, but then I don't understand because the decision is for the owner. And I can understand when Mourinho left and people may have questioned, you know, whether players were were responding to him. But I didn't feel like players were, I don't know, boycotting De Rossi. So why take an issue with the players? What have the players done? Under De Rossi, everybody was taking an issue with the fact that a lot of players were playing and not performing. And the issue was, why is De Rossi trusting these guys? Why is he relying on Pellegrini, Mancini, or whatever, you know? So the issue is the ownership. Fine. But then address the ownership. Leave the team out of it, especially on nights where they need someone to cheer for them, especially on nights where the tension is palpable, like tonight. Roma go up 1-0, and then the demons take over. Why do the demons take over? Because this is a team that is still playing crippled, emotionally crippled, after this De Rossi thing blew up in their faces. Nobody saw it coming. Muric said it a number of times that the team was completely mentally shattered after De Rossi left. He had to address them. They told him that they were all sad about it. So I think this is anything but for the good of the team. In these instances, you always have to ask yourself, you know, who benefits from this? Who benefits? Because if you, deep down in your heart, you're still outraged, it's fine. Tweet something if you must. Write something. Be angry on Facebook, like my zio Alessandro, you know, who has a bad foot and he spends all his day at home writing stuff up on Facebook and believing all those weird artificial intelligence images of like cute puppies, whatever.
Yeah.
Be like that. Sure. But then at least those who go to the stadium, be on the side of the team. That's all. Like if there is one entity that in all of this has to go unscathed, it's the team. At the end of the day, that's what we are all here for.
Well, speaking of demons, we see another returning to the Olimpico this weekend. I don't want to spend more than 30 seconds on this because, again, this is one of those matches where doing a preview or going deep into this makes zero sense because it's Venezia. It's Eusebio Di Francesco. Need I say more? Need I say more? Listen. I watched them somehow win against Genoa. I don't know if that match says more about Genoa or Roma. The latter is, I'm tempted to say the latter, but that notwithstanding, this is Venezia. They have struggled. I watched that match against Milan, and it could have been an American football score. I mean, Eusebio is so lucky they did not hang double digits onto him. It was right from the start.
It was embarrassing. It was one way. It was embarrassing.
It was horrible. Horrible. So again, I'm not, I can't pretend like this is some opponent that should even be.
But you know what awaits you. You know what awaits you, because you know that if you crush them, they will sack Eusebio, and this will not happen. You know, in a sense that, Like Eusebio, dude, we sent Eusebio to Serie B on the last match day of last season. Do you really think that we're going to cause him to lose his job this time? We sent Frosinone packing to Serie B by losing to Empoli on the last match day of the season. Di Francesco has to get his revenge. I believe that the Purgino is right around the corner in this case, because it has to be written in the stars that this limp team that has failed to show anything this year, Di Francesco, who went there for some reason, rejecting other clubs that were much more convincing, like Empoli or Udinese. And
I mean, it's just amazing to me. More than one club would want that guy. Like you want. He has pictures of somebody. I mean, there is some incriminating stuff he is holding on to.
He's got the contacts, He's got the.
He has something on somebody, because you do not get this level and this constant opportunity for redemption when you have shown yourself to just not be up to it.
It's interesting. It's interesting. And also that he always seems to make the bad choice. Like he always takes on like the worst job possible.
Venezia. Have you ever been to?
No, no, I
always
know,
make fun
know.
Of the stadiums. Have you ever seen that stadium? No, how? Yeah,
no, I've been to the airport. That's enough.
if in any civilized country, stepping foot into that stadium, it would be condemned.
My God.
That.
This is a late entry into the tourism portion of the show.
Well, listen, if we get into a tourist part in Venezia, which that airport. There is few
it's quite
greater hells on earth.
Yeah, it's traumatizing.
It is tourists galore, as you would expect.
Of course.
Just the worst group of people.
And It's the worst tourists. It's all the ones who take easy jet flights from like Birmingham on 10 pounds for a flight on a Friday evening after they went out for a couple of beers at the pub, and they're like, "Oh, Mary, should we go to Venice?" You know, and then they pop in with the easy jet overnight flight, and they land, and then you're surrounded by these weird alcoholics who are there for like 8 hours, and then they go back to Birmingham or Blackpool or wherever.
See this huge ship pulling up to the port, and it's got dolphins painted on the side of it, these ugly pastel colors. One of the few places on planet Earth where I pretend I don't speak English. where are you trying to go? Don't know what you're saying. Just horrible. But they
I'm glad we spent.
Again,
I'm glad
do a breakdown of their team or what they did over the summer.
I was just about to say that I'm glad we spent more time talking about their airport than about the match that we're about to play.
I mean, I'm telling
you. Which again,
you,
it's not going to be.
Had he not defeated
be...
Genoa last weekend, he would have been gone. They would have sacked him. Which, I mean, that in and of itself, the fact that he needed to lose that match, they won, and now it's against Roma. I mean, the Portuguese, that is like the first ingredient. That's like turning on the stove to boil the water. That's the first step of
it's there, you of know. Yeah, and he's coming back with a vengeance because De Rossi was his friend, so he's coming back with the
vengeance. Yes. Okay, that was our well-researched insight into the match this weekend. We will be back after Roma face Venezia on Sunday afternoon. Until then, ciao.